There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast.
On the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Man, oh man, back on the road again.
Back on the road, baby.
Me and my boys.
Yep.
My two sweet sons and I. Just covered with semen.
No.
All in each. No, is that bad way to start?
Oh, no, I mean, you can start it however you want to. I'm not covered in navel juices.
No, no, I definitely wiped.
Ugh. Thank you, Henry. What's up, everyone? Back on the road again. What's up, everyone? This is the relaxed fit. That's the kind of jeans I wear.
Yeah.
Episode of last podcast on the left. We're in beautiful Vancouver.
It's fine.
It's great.
It's fine. I definitely went and in very typical Canadian fashion, I went to get our rental car because we're driving this whole time. We're going to drive down to Seattle. We're going to drive down to Portland. And the guy that was checking me out, not hitting on me, but giving me the car.
He was just giving you the car.
I'm just trying to figure out what's the terminology. The guy who rented me the fucking car.
Yeah.
The guy who walked around. He made me spin around.
I
had to spin around. No, he said, I got to check for dings. I got to check for dings. And he walked around the Explorer trying to check for dings. And he's just like, nah, I got to double check for dings. And then he went and made me.
Car?
I went around and he was just like, oh, there's a divot here. And he put a finger right in my fucking ass.
All right. Well, yeah. You're Henry Zabrowski. We're with Marcus and I'm Ben, of course. But you all probably already know that.
But I was getting checked out. I was getting molested. Man at Enterprise. I'm not. Again, I wasn't.
I don't think that you were.
No, I just have it on the mind. I have it on the mind.
It seems like you wanted to get molested by the man at Enterprise.
I was waggling it.
It seems like you were.
I wasn't wearing a shirt. And I have my little short shorts on.
Is the marriage going south? What's happening?
My wife and I make love.
Well, we'll have to have Natalie in here for a point counterpoint.
We really do. But he said, what do you get into today? Oh, when you're done getting your Explorer there. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I was going to walk around, maybe do something touristy, walk around Gastown or something. He's like, oh, you're going to do a thing that boring people do. And I was like, what if I have a straight razor? Well, what if a straight razor and I slash open your face?
Yeah, honestly, I was trying to get a cab today and I was put on hold. And then the whole message came back and said, you know, we all hate being on hold. It's better than hanging up and calling again. So just wait a couple of minutes.
I know we all do it. Explain me.
We all hate being on hold, and it is better to just stay on hold and don't call again.
I don't need to be told that.
I know.
I don't need to be told that like I'm some kind of fucking moron.
He's a grown man.
There's a reason the Queen is on the currency here in Canada. It's a nanny state. But that's okay. Sometimes you need to be reassured. If you're heavy, full of methamphetamines, if your brain is completely messed up, a good reminder.
My
stay
only
on hold,
queen.
Don't call back.
My only queen's RuPaul.
That's
the only
true.
Person I herald to,
honestly,
and I will be her subject.
And this is a little political, but get Harriet Tubman on the 20, Marcus.
Sure. Yeah.
RuPaul on the 5.
Ooh, I'd do it.
I'm calling it.
I'd spend those 5s. There's a story I wanted to bring up today in our Relax Fit episode. Can you feel just how relaxed this is?
I think they can.
Just how much room your clotted knees have just sitting around in your big old Navy circus tent Relaxed Fit jeans.
Ooh, that's me.
It is. Nice.
I love it.
But so we had a listener recently send a letter to me.
Yes.
That was, I thought it was interesting. Sent a little email. And he was talking about how he has a neighbor that is a bit obese, right?
Right.
And his father would say to him, they were like talking about stuff, and he would get these big pizza deliveries all the time. The neighbor would get all these pizza
of
deliveries.
Of course, he's overweight. Yeah, you gotta, I get the pizzas. I get it. Yeah.
I see what you do.
Oh, yeah.
I know your lifestyle. And, the father at some point said to his son, hey, just so you know, if he ever asks you to go over there, Just if he asks you to take a shit in a pizza box, make sure you get a lot of money for it.
Yeah.
He said this to his, and he made it like a boogeyman, like in within there, like the father used it as a teaching lesson, saying like don't trust strangers because sometimes they'll ask you to take a shit in a pizza box, and he just thought that was like an idiosyncratic thing that his father came up with.
Honestly, I think that as far as parenting goes, that's a great father tip to stranger danger.
That's not stranger danger at all. That's he said if he asked you to take a shit in a pizza box, get money for it.
Yeah,
he
didn't get money for it.
Tell me, tell a cop.
No, he said get make money
for it.
Honestly, yeah, get money for it.
Right? That's what my father would do.
Exploit the pervert.
Yeah, that's what you do. You drain him. You drain his wallet, then you drain his balls.
I mean, if everyone's on the up and up here, we got a bunch of adults. You know, when you want to dump in pizza boxes,
Kissel.
go
that's not
do
what
your
we're talking about.
Okay.
So, the teaching
lesson.
Someone
listening right now taking a dump in a Domino's box, just be like, oh, I hope they don't make fun of me for doing this.
This is my lifestyle.
I love this show so much. I'm just a dumper in pizza boxes.
Just leave me alone. This is what I like to do. I make them hot and long.
This is like a new Pizza Hut pizza.
But it turns out that was not just some random thing that the father was saying to him. Is that it's actually based upon a guy I have the unfortunate opportunity to have now in the center of my brain.
Poo-poo in the pizza box is a true story?
Yes. It's based upon a man named Edward Savitz. Ed Savitz, who was an American businessman in the, who basically was also a philanthropist. He was an actuary, and he was eventually arrested for paying thousands of boys and young men for engaging in anal and oral sex. Sure, I guess that's normal.
Well, no, that's but not boys. They're children.
He purchased over 312 bags of boys' underwear that was found in a storage unit, and he would often have boys come to his house and shit in pizza boxes, and he would take those pizza boxes and he'd put them back in the storage unit just like it's like it's an old sweater.
Honestly, I need... What's the name of that stupid reality show where they do the storage...
Storage Wars.
Storage Wars.
Oh, my God.
If somebody's just like, I'll do 200, 250, 300.
Okay, what's in these bags? Oh, it seems to be a bunch of clothes. Let me just... These are boys' underwear.
Honestly, but they would be like... And then when they're just tally... Because they do like 300 for the unit, and then they tally up what they find in the unit. I wouldn't be surprised if they were like, this is $50,000 worth of boys' underwear. This is incredible. And they just sell it to, like, I don't even know what disgusting billionaire out there that wants it. I don't want to diss on Warren Buffett.
No, Warren Buffett does not have nearly as spicy enough of an interest as sniffing boys' underwear.
That's the thing with the Buffett. He's got so much money.
Yeah.
But that's how he keeps it. He doesn't spend it.
Yeah,
he's
he doesn't
boring.
Spend it on little boys' underwear.
No,
he
I
doesn't.
Understand that, but he also doesn't spend it on anything.
As far as we know.
That's true.
But if you wanted to buy full-grown woman's or man's underwear, I say more power to him. He makes him a Japanese president.
Absolutely. Why not? Have fun.
But would I then... So, long story short, because we don't really cover things truly in depth in any relaxed fit episode, but I was started researching Ed Savitz.
This is a small poo-poo, not a long poo-poo story.
It's just... Okay, there's just a couple things involved here. Number one, there's a massive conspiracy theory that he might have been connected to Sandusky, which is, don't think is probably not that difficult, because they would hang out at the same, what's the term, at fundraising parties. They were always there, because that's what he would do. Because Ed Savitz ran, obviously, he ran in a camp, essentially, quote-unquote camp, which was essentially a place for troubled youth to go and be rehabilitated.
Oh,
and so
gross.
He would groom these kids, and basically he would pay them. He had an apartment on Rittenhouse Square for a period of time that became like the center for all of his activity. He was there believe as far back as 1975. He basically would offer kids money to come party, and it would start with the like what we saw with Dean Corll or John Wayne Gacy, where it would start with, you guys got to come back, we're going to play some grab ass, there's going to be skinny dipping with girls. But it's with girls.
But it just seems like it's all old dudes.
Yep.
Okay.
And young men. And people would complain about the heavy metal types, which they call the little boys coming out of there, like just 14-year-olds with long dark hair and like and fucking Pantera shirts on, that were basically, he would say, come over, they'd all horse around, they'd get into the pool and skinny dip, right? Where he'd play this game where
you're really loosely using the word horse around.
Yeah, oh, it was
all horsed around with our friends growing up. I'm pretty sure defecation in pizza boxes was never included in
I'd say play grab ass would be better way
well, sure, yeah, but a horse around was also what's happening, especially when the old man is there hung like a goddamn horse.
I hope. Oh,
and he would basically, they said that he would play this game where he'd get real close to you in the pool, and he would do the thing like a horse's tail, where he'd like the penis just kind of touch the back of your legs, right? And he'd be like, oh, that's what a mistake I just made. Isn't that funny?
What
a funny little mistake.
An accident. Yeah.
And so he eventually, what you do then, you should create like a shame circle, where then everybody's kind of like feeling kind of icky and weird about the fact that they're a bunch of 13-year-olds with other 13-year-old girls that he also made get naked, and they gave everybody weed and booze. But slowly but surely, it turned into, here's $10. Give me that underwear. You play baseball today? Give me that underwear. And then he'd go, like, literally be like, he'd have them go run around outside till they get nice and sweaty. Then he'd get the underwear, right? And he'd keep it in a bag. And they called him Uncle Eddie, but some people just called the underwear sniffer, which was like, if you have the nickname of the underwear sniffer in the neighborhood, right, why are people going over to the house?
Yeah. They also called him Fast Eddie.
Yeah, old Fast Eddie. And one of his other favorite things then.
Freaking car dealer. What's going on with this guy?
He's an actuary,
and he looks like what's his name's character. Big Boy did it. He looks like what's his name, Dustin Hoffman's character from Dick Tracy. But he'd have this other game where he'd go underneath a potty training seat. And they'd shit into his mouth. And then what he'd do, he'd feed them different types of foods to make the shit taste better.
Well, according to this Wikipedia page here, so he did keep the feces in pizza boxes. And evidently, he told the boys to eat cheese to make their feces taste better. So he was a cheese poop guy.
It's a whole thing. This is a hard way to start the episode.
So yeah, gross.
That's what you call it. That's a scat connoisseur.
Yeah. He was a sommelier.
So he's like, oh, that's a mozzarella.
It's a sommelier.
It's a mozzarella. Oh, that's a nice mozzarella.
One of the things aside.
Why are we talking about this again?
But you know what it is?
You have been fixated on this. Your brain.
It's haunting
me. I can tell
me.
Right now. I've been reading Howard Stern's new book.
Yes.
This is a therapy session for you. I can tell.
It bothers me.
You've been sitting with this in your brain for, what, 5 days now?
Yep.
Okay, so.
But the one thing that really sticks with me was the fact that they tried to put together a documentary for it. I guess there was a Kickstarter to start a documentary about his story.
Yeah, it's called The Resurrection of Uncle Eddie.
Yeah.
A positive story?
No.
Okay, thank God. No, you never know. Sometimes these dudes are just like, yes, I'm an actuary, and please make a documentary about my life.
It is perfectly normal for a man to love a boy. Can't a man love a dog? A man can love a boy. But apparently, I guess the owners of the Kickstarter, he just stole a bunch of people's money and never made the movie.
Well, it was in 2015 that this was supposed to happen. They put together a real nice sizzle reel. Like, some of the characters, because this all happened in Philadelphia, some of the characters they found were amazing.
This is kind of what I wanted to bring up.
No, well, these are guys that are grown up now, because all this happened in the late 80s, and they're talking to these men like 2015, so, you know, it's 20, 30 years after all of the events, and they're just like these, I mean, just hard-bitten South Philly fucks.
These dudes are intense, but it's the way they're talking about it. They're like, yeah, we never thought that there was like a thing about it. We thought it was the funniest thing in the world. He did this thing where he'd shit on the floor, and he asked my buddy to go lick it and give him $50, and we were all laughing for the rest of them. And they were all talking like it was the funniest shit.
A weird thing with poop, because remember after the Eagles won the Super Bowl, that guy just happily ate horse shit.
You are obsessed with this guy.
It is the funniest story I've ever seen in my life, because I actually rewatched the video recently and I didn't realize. Did you ever see this video?
Did you go to school to be an actuary?
No.
You bring up the Philadelphia fan eating horse shit like once a week.
Yeah.
It is the single funniest thing in human history. The internet, I think it could go away other than our podcast. Uh-huh. But as long as we have our podcast and that video, I'd be totally happy.
Yes.
Because the guy celebrates. celebrates. He wants. He's like, all right, good.
We know. Everybody knows. The
I know.
Video.
Yeah. But then at the end, I didn't realize because I showed it to another buddy at a bar. When you hang, I'm a little bar fly sometimes.
What?
Yes.
Sometimes,
and
huh?
Sometimes. And you, sometimes. You start talking sports.
That's a funny term.
Well, there's 7 days in a week. And then some of the time I'm at a bar. I was telling the buddy my story, and it was about the guy who ate the horse shit. And then I showed the video again, and I didn't realize at the end of the video, the guy who ate the horse shit says, "All right, who's next?" And then no one was next. Everyone was just like, "No, man, we can't believe you did that."
It shows how, like, almost, I'm going to almost say the toxic masculinity of South Philly save these men from a lot of trauma later on, because in a way, them laughing at all of this shit, because they were laughing at what, I mean, obviously they're internalizing some extreme abuse.
They might need to go to therapy.
I'm not saying they're safe, but
I don't think they got over it just by saying, like, yeah, it was hilarious. Like,
it's just hilarious. The way they talked about sucking this man's dick. I mean, like, yeah, you need an extra $10? You go up to Fast Eddie's. Because Fast Eddie, he was fast with the money, but also he was real fast with the shooting. And that's the best part. You only got to suck it for a little bit. Like, they were, like, saying stuff like that. I'd be like, yeah, that's all you got to do. And you're just like, Jesus fucking Christ.
No, it's fucking awful. Apparently, makers of the documentary raised about $20,000, and I don't know if they took the money or not because they did a Kickstarter page,
but there's no documentary. I haven't seen, because I went looking for it.
Well, I don't think they met their goal.
Well, this guy, honestly,
that's a shame, because I want to hear more about the story. Unfortunately, I want to hear about because it's mostly just about kind of what we dealt with Ed Buck.
Of course.
And these guys that are, which we've talked about constantly, and one day, when part of the Illuminati rundown of all of Last Podcast and Left, we'll be connecting all of these highly connected child molesters that are just like this guy. You know, this guy is a part of a fucking system.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And he's come up out of nowhere. And when it comes to the foster care system and the kids in need of stuff, I mean, it's a pipeline for pedophilia.
And they videotaped a lot of this shit too. They were saying that there's a lot of footage. There's a lot of photos, and there's a lot of horrible shit that also serves as a blackmail system. And because, especially with the guys he hung out with, but the reason why they ended up getting him is they got two kids to wear a fucking wire. They actually got bait kids to go in and being like, "This is my pal, Suck It Frank." He's like, "Yeah, I was born with my mouth in the shape of a circle." And Ed Shavitz is like, "Thank God you came." And then they went, and then he offered them money to have sex with them. And then the cops came in and busted him. And talk about a way to deflate a boner.
Yeah. There it is. Well, thank God. But I would also argue Ed Shavitz is a serial killer.
Yeah,
because he tested positive for HIV.
Yes,
and so his arrest caused an AIDS scare all around Philadelphia.
Because he said he had sex with they assume they look at the numbers and they talk with witnesses and they think it's upwards of 700.
So it's very possible he gave AIDS to, you know, 700 people, and I'm sure certainly all of them would have died at that point in time because there was no treatment for it. So I think he's also probably a serial killer.
Yo, I would put that as a serial killer. I put that almost close to like a Harold Shipman. Like, there's something about the passive nature.
That's actually very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, of somebody who kills many people, because that's more of a killer nurse. That's a killer doctor. But the idea of doing it through kind of like a medium, like doing a thing where I'm getting you sick, I am killing you, but I'm not doing it with a knife or a gun, where it's like the doctors, when doctors become killers, and they do it in the very, what they almost view in an almost passive way, even though it is active.
That's interesting, though. I wonder, we should cover a story about, I guess we've just done that with Ed Shavitz, but that is kind of an interesting thing, the idea of spreading disease as a, I mean, because you would, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you would actually consider him a serial killer, because who knows if he actually knew he had AIDS while he was doing
it.
He
said he knew he had AIDS.
Oh,
he was spindly, and when they caught him, he died literally 6 months later. He died, like, they basically caught him, and they caught him in late 1992, and he died early 1993. Well, so he, like, got, well, the thing, too, is that I take it back. You may be right, because it might straight up just have been he was getting sicker and sicker and sicker, and he just wasn't. Yeah, he
acknowledging
didn't know.
It.
Well, it seems like he was financially well off, right?
So he was incredibly well off.
He went to the doctor, and they definitely knew how to diagnose that stuff. So I wouldn't be surprised if he did know.
But on the other hand, like, I don't think he was doing it in order to kill them, because to be a serial killer, you have to have intent.
Hmm.
Like, you have to have I would not consider a serial... To be a serial killer, you do have to have intent. Like, I am trying to kill these people with this method. And if you don't have that intent, then I wouldn't necessarily call you a serial killer. I could call you a mass murderer, but I don't think we should throw around the serial killer word.
Let's not throw it around.
Because, I mean, Marcus is...
classify these things.
Marcus is doing the second draft of the book right now, so you do not want to cross him about serial killers, because he will cross the line.
Yes, if you are someone who knows that world a little bit better, please email us sidestories@gmail.com, because that is a really interesting conversation.
What if you're a mass marketed pedophile with AIDS?
If you're a cop or a detective?
Oh no,
or
I thought that you were talking
about someone
seeding people slowly with HIV. Yeah,
we will forward that immediately to the FBI if you say that email, so please do not.
And also, if the makers of the documentary, I'd like to know what happened with that. Like, I'd like to talk to those people. I'd like to know what happened, because I don't think they stole the money, because usually on Kickstarter, like, it says, like, goal met, right?
Yes.
And I went to their Kickstarter page, and it just said, like, money raised, like $20,000, because what they need, they've got all of the...
I guess it was hard having Donnie Giannicocchio be like, and the very thing being like, yeah, I'll eat shit right now if you give me $75.
It was weird, actually. I just looked at their Kickstarter page, and it just says, that's a lot of poo-poo.
Yeah, I didn't like that title for it.
It was very... For the documentary. That's a lot of poo-poo.
Well, I think what they need the money for is the archival footage. Is they have to pay ABC, NBC, Howard Stern, because Stern actually was the who broke the story. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Because
I listened to that clip. It's very, very funny, because they did it sort of as a unfortunately humorous news, which is also the way I just did it. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. No, I'm reading Stern's new book, which I highly recommend. Especially if you're an amateur interviewer out there, it's interesting to just kind of read an interview and see kind of his style.
Mm-hmm.
Realize that because Nat got it too, and we started reading it in the house, and it is legitimately... I was like, I never really understood that Howard Stern had a process before until I started really like reading the interviews. Me, like, man, he really gets people to say whatever by asking. It's just asking really intense questions, like up front, like no bullshit. Like him talking with, I remember him doing a thing with Ozzy Osbourne's son, Jack Osbourne, being like, "You wear condoms?" Like the dude, like with his girlfriend in front of him. It's pretty fun.
Yes, he is kind of fun, dare I say, which is the name of the new wrestling podcast coming to the Last Podcast Network at some point within, what do you think, 2 weeks?
I'd say 2 to 3 weeks, yeah.
2 to 3 weeks. Mm. So it'll be out there. All right, well, so that's that dude. Ed, what was
that's horrible. What a horrible story.
Yeah, absolutely horrible story.
I'm sorry I did this to everybody.
I know. Ed Savitz, he was arrested. But
it's
again,
it's barely a story. I just say, like, have fun, look it up yourself.
Yeah.
Look it up. It's,
have fun with it.
Yeah,
5,000 photographs of boys, 312 soiled boys' underwear. All right, so he was...
Can I ask, maybe this is an appropriate question. When it says soiled underwear, do you think it just means previously worn, or do you think there needs to be Duke on it?
I think soiled means previously worn. I think it means used underwear, but demonstrably used.
So it's got to have Duke on it.
Doesn't have to have Duke. If it has sweat stains on it, I think that's just fine.
How often are you sweating? I've never had sweat stains in my underwear.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
It comes out. They get sweaty. They get sweaty.
Yeah, but after you say it's a real hot day, you take off your underwear after wearing it for 12 hours.
Two to three days.
Is it dry? Is it demonstrable?
No one wants to think about our underwear. We are not porn stars.
Well, I wear boxer briefs. And now what I did is I got I went and got some fancier stuff that has like the wicking. I got some of the wicking stuff. So basically it's like I'm wearing a golf shirt, but I'm wearing it on my balls.
Great. What do you Ben?
I just wear, honestly, my underwear. I go to a laundromat in Brooklyn.
No, not your underwear. What are your stories?
Oh, I thought we wanted to talk about underwear. No, just okay. Just to wrap up on this dude here. So evidently he did know Sandusky, and yes, they probably were together.
Oh yeah, they definitely Eiffel Towered a couple of Boy Scouts and high fived each other. I'm
certain.
Second
Mile Foundation was the name of the foundation that Sandusky had. So anyway, he's dead, and Sandusky, God knows what's happening to him in prison. All right. Well, let's do this story.
Do you
here.
Think they even let him use the showers? Because at this point, guess what? They don't have to worry about
him
it.
Into the showers. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, like, but he's not even that. Like, he's not like this is maybe inappropriate.
He's big.
Maybe this is inappropriate to say, but like, he's kind of gross to want to have sex with, right?
It's prison.
I would imagine Jerry Sandusky is in protective custody 23 hours a day and gets maybe a shower a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And either way, we do our jokes here, but prison rape is a real problem in this country, and it's something that needs to be addressed.
I'm not pro it.
I know you're not. But also, when you say I'm not pro it, it does make people think maybe he's pro it.
No, I say I'm not pro it so that it can't. It's on the record. It is on the record. Good Lord. That's all that matters is the record.
That's what happened with O'Donnell, the candidate, where her first campaign ad was, I am not a witch. And then everyone's like, maybe she's a witch. Anyway.
Rise from your grave. Rise from your grave.
All right, let's move on to this carnival worker. Obviously, there's a stigma of carnival workers, but sometimes stigmas apply.
Yeah, because, I mean, is Carney racist? We found out that people
say Carney.
I don't know because I found out when we said we got
carnival,
some more of our sensitive Newfoundler that group of people when we call them Newfies, they got some people get upset. They broach at the topic of being called a Newfie.
There's always three people upset with everything.
Yes,
they'd be upset if you didn't call them Newfies.
The reason why I said the word Newfie is because one of my best friends. His mother's from Newfoundland, and I know her quite well, and she refers to herself as Newfies.
But is it like the way my father calls us a bunch of dirty Polacks? But if I said that to a group of people on the street, I'd get beat to death?
Maybe it's something that since we're not from Newfoundland, we can't say Newfie.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. All right. Well, this carnival worker, he's a serial killer. He confessed to killing three women within 18 days. So he's a traveling carnival worker. His name is James Michael Wright. He's 23 years old. He's out of Mendota, Virginia. He confessed to fatally shooting three women during an 18-day span between February 28th and March 17th near his home, but claimed the killings were accidental.
Oh, yeah.
Also, if you're a carnival worker and you accidentally kill three people, it doesn't make the ride much safer. Like, if you're just like, oh, I forgot the screws. Why do I have all these screws in my pocket? Oh, dang it.
I have questions.
Okay.
First of all, is it a traveling carnival operator?
Yes, it was a traveling carny.
So these are the parking lot guys.
Is that right?
Yeah, the guys that set up in big parking lots.
Oh, yeah, of course.
For a few days and then move on.
So, he wasn't with like the carnival. Like, he wasn't
No, he was just a traveling carnival worker. So he says it was on accident. And this is according to the Washington County Sheriff Fred Newman. He says, quote, we find that hard to believe based on the information we have.
That was accidental.
Yes. So Newman said Wright admitted killing the three victims after meeting them through his employment as a subcontractor for James H. Drew Exposition, a Georgia-based amusement company that operates alongside the East Coast.
So
we sort of ran into him.
So he murdered women who came to the carnival.
Basically, the other victims, it was people that were not necessarily at the carnival. They were just kind of around his area.
They wouldn't. Why would they be around his area if they weren't at the carnival?
No, this was near his home. The remains of two bodies
so he did all this as a hobby? It wasn't even on the job?
No, I don't.
I thought this was like there's something wicked this way comes.
Well, this is according to, the sheriff. He says the investigation is ongoing regarding the suspect's activities while traveling with the carnival because, again, we know the carnival traveled extensively, certainly throughout the East Coast. Basically, this individual killed three women within an 18-day period. Asked if Wright was a serial killer, Newman said, I think you can say that. Yes. Marcus, what do you think? Serial killer?
Yes.
And so this man probably has more bodies, don't you think?
More than likely. I have more carnival questions.
Oh, my.
What kind of carny was he? Was he like a roustabout? Was he a operator? Was he a concession worker?
Marcus Kissel, it's not you.
I'm looking at his mug. No, I can speculate. I'm looking at his mugshot, and I'm going to say this guy, What's the name of that sugary thing that's all fluffy?
Cotton candy.
Candy.
He's a cotton candy guy.
Concessions.
God, you really think? Let me see his face.
He looks like a concessions guy.
Let me see his face.
He's concessions.
I don't know. He looks like a guy that could put up a tent.
That's what a roustabout is.
This guy is handsome by carnival worker standards.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's new. So those
but
guys
don't you
move
want
up.
The concessions?
Those are the grunts. The new roustabouts. Tell me if I'm wrong, Marcus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I believe roustabouts are more new to the carnival world because that's the backbreaking work. That you don't get like the barker
but
stuff. You don't get all of the retail side of carnival work until you have shown your bones.
It's tough to say though. He's got a face with two eyes, a nose, and a mouth.
Yeah.
And two
and
years.
And he also murdered three girls, which is right at the top of the application.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, of course. That probably got him the job. But I'm going to say this guy might have been in the concessions because he's the face of the company.
I'm going to go with roustabout. I'm going to go with Henry.
Okay.
Especially if he was new. If he was new, yeah, you definitely have to work your way up in the
carnival
business.
Well, we don't know that he was new. He was 23 years old and he traveled around all the time.
He's 23.
Yeah, but on the other hand, at 23, he might have been in the carnival business for 5-6 years.
Oh, yeah, 10, 15 years.
Anyway,
yeah.
just quickly here, the victim, Sam.
So he shot them at a distance. Do you know anything else about the nature of the crimes?
Okay, so what we know is, so Jocelyn M. Elsep, she was 17 years old, RIP, that's super sad. She was the daughter of one of his coworkers.
Oh.
So he shot her. The other victims were identified as Elizabeth Marie Van Meter. She was only 22. And the other victim was Athena Hobson. Both women were reported missing in March. So it seems like he was, you know, he shot the daughter of someone he knew.
Got that first taste.
But you don't know anything else, any other
details? No, I just have what's here in the New York Post.
Okay, so this will unfold. But so we don't know if he has more bodies.
Well, one body
he confessed to those three murders?
Yes, he did. Mm. And he said it was an accident. Yeah. One body was found in a shallow grave.
Always do that. I always put my accidents in a shallow grave. I burned a couple of pancakes the other day. On accident.
I know.
And, you know, I always then have to drive about 20 miles out into the desert. I build a shallow grave next to all my boys' underpants that I keep just for memories.
What kind of pizza is this? Oh, it's my favorite kind. Poo-poo pizza. One body. This is very sad, obviously, folks. You know that it's a true crime show, so it gets a little blue. One body was found in a shallow grave, while the other two were discovered near some logs. So yeah, he was full on.
These logs will hide him.
Yeah,
these logs will do it.
Love that New York Post reporting.
Some logs. I mean, they didn't elaborate on if it was an oak or a pine tree. But
boy, it's just that big city beat it, Jimmy Breslin. Some logs.
New York Post reporters hear a lot of these stories. I don't even think they register it at all. But
no, why? They don't feel feelings.
No, they can't.
I think a real reporter shouldn't feel anything. Really, they should be kind of like dead eyed. Constant, like, looking out just for the truth, not experiencing anything sort of subjective whatsoever.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate description of most reporters. Totally dead-eyed and without a soul.
Like, full-on, like, little camcorders, but with penises and vaginas.
Yeah, you can. Absolutely. So that's a little tale there, which is sad. So be careful. And also, just a little story here before we get to Marcus's fun little breakdown of whatever Marcus wants to talk about.
I got stuff.
I know he's got stuff, but of course Slipknot. We know Slipknot. We're
personally.
No, we don't know anyone cool personally. No. Well, that's not true. Anyone we know that we've met and that knows us, you're cool.
Good rollback is a really, really good save.
Yeah. Thank you so much. So the Slipknot frontman, Corey Taylor. He claims that he blew out his testicle while practicing vocals for Slipknot's upcoming European tour. And I'm just going to say that is a hell of a advertising tactic.
It's to super be like, metal.
This rocks so hard, I blew out my nut.
Out my nut.
Yes. He said that he was pissing blood. He said, Corey added, this is what he wrote in a tweet. He said, working on my 87 docking high notes this morning, fucked around and blew out the left testicle. Careful on re-entry, kids. Then added hashtag kiss of death and piss and blood. Yeah. So Slipknot still got it. Although everyone gets older and at some point, you bust your testicle singing.
I see James Hetfield with his I want to say it's like an arthritis guard or something he has on his hand.
Yeah, Kirk Hammett too.
Yeah, it's starting to happen to all of them.
Yeah, they're all breaking down pretty fast.
Yeah, it's a hard life on the road. Look at us.
Absolutely.
We've been on the road for 3 years, and I'm fucking. Oh. I turned white.
I
do you remember when I started? When I was Puerto Rican.
Do you remember that? Yeah.
Wow.
I remember that.
Wow.
All right. So those are a couple of stories from my little books here. It's not a book. It's a phone. But
yeah, that's really strange. You called your phone multiple books. Where are you?
Honestly, we had the first time ever on the flight over here, I read the book. Granted, it was the Howard Stern book. It was a pleasure read, not a work read, as Marcus always does. But Marcus played video games and watched movies, and I read a book on a plane.
Wow. Yeah.
I was waiting for the next edit to come back. Actually, no, you're not completely true. The first flight, I played video games and watched movies. Second flight, worked on Rendlesham.
But we're waiting for
the second edit to come back on the book, so I spent a nice couple hours playing Cuphead and watching Attack on Titan.
Man, watching you play Cuphead. I'll at least say this.
What's
Marcus,
Cuphead?
Cuphead's a game.
No, I know it's a game. What's it about?
I don't know. It's a game where...
You're going to make me explain Cuphead?
All right, fine. It's about Cuphead and Mughead, and they've both lost their souls to the devil in a dice game. And so in order to save their souls, they have to travel through their imaginary land defeating gigantic monsters in order to collect the soul contracts for the devil.
You know, man...
You asked.
I don't know.
You can't explain because it's a side scroller. So if you try to explain the plot of a side scroller, really doesn't make any.
It's a very difficult side scrolling game.
Also, by the way, if you're out there and you know how to make a video game, we would love to do a video game with Last Podcast on the Left.
We would.
That's a very big ask.
Yeah.
We've actually been approached for a side scroller. So that would be awesome if that happened.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, do it in a second.
I want to make a Metroidvania.
That would be sweet.
Yeah, they know what I mean.
Yeah, that would be sweet. All right. Now, I started playing. I want to say thank you to anybody who gave me the recommendation to play RimWorld.
Yeah, I've been playing RimWorld.
Is this another sexual thing for you?
No, I just do it to myself, though.
It's called a RimWorld?
What I do is I play the game, and then I wet my finger, and I just play with my butthole, so it goes... like a crystal, like a, you do with the crystal
Get
glass.
Get me out of here!
That's a weird thing for a butthole to say.
But it's nice. I think it's refreshing to watch Marcus play video games.
Yeah,
because at least he does it like a man would.
Oh,
honestly, like you don't make any noises. You just sit and play the thing. You sit and play the games. Where it's like I sit with Holden McNeely.
What are you talking about?
Have you ever sat with Holden McNeely while he's playing with the Switch?
Trying to find a roundabout way to make fun of Holden McNeely
of
from Wizard of the Bruiser.
Yes, but watching him play video games, of him going like, he's got his scrunch up like he's fucking 12, like in the back of a van, no matter what, he's playing the Switch, be like, this game's cheating and he like looks at him like, he's like, I'm trying, like he like huffs. If you, I like try to say something to him, be like, Holden, and he goes, go like, what is it? And it's being like, you're a fucking 36-year-old man. You're a 36-year-old man. Stop acting like you're in the fucking back of a family vacation in this fucking station wagon.
Well, all right. Wizard and the Bruiser, check it out. Holden does know what he's talking about when it comes to all things video games. He's doing competitions now.
He just goes to them.
I know.
He just goes to the building where there's a competition.
Yeah, I'm not defending.
He lost immediately.
This is one of our oldest friends, by the way.
That's why I'm allowed to say these things.
I know, but sometimes we have to remind people we are still all friends. But yes, Holden's very annoying. I understand that.
Dude, interrupting me. I like to hear the music.
It's fine. All right.
Live from your grave.
Marcus, what have you brought for us today?
Henry mentioned music, and I'm going to be going back way back to the 1960s to tell the story of record producer Joe Meek.
Cool.
Marcus with his segment. That's good.
Thank you.
Totally professional.
Well, Joe Meek was a revolutionary but nowadays little-known record producer who, back in the early to mid-60s, produced a fair amount of hits in the UK that are now largely forgotten outside of the music geek world.
Well, stuff like Strawberry Alarm Clock and, like, He Who Goes to the Watchtower Goes, like, weird, like, that kind of prog shit.
Even more obscure than Incense and Peppermints. Like, it's way past that.
Yeah, Incense and Peppermints is famous. I love that song.
And I love Incense and Peppermints. Peppermint wine.
Makes me feel like I want to wear pasties. What? Oh, really? You just talked about your underwear. I look great in pasties.
It's all about you. Just
well, that's my end of my career life. Where
just
I'm
two
just,
pieces
like,
of bologna on top of your nipples being like, it's lunchtime.
We're going to Thunderbones in Atlanta or something.
No, it's hard to nail down exactly what Meek's specific sound was, but if I had to describe the majority of his work, I'd say dirty space-age noise manipulation filtered through the mind of a guy who thought ghosts talked to him through his recording equipment.
Hell yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's fucking cool.
It's cool as shit.
You just sold me on him.
Does he have a serious mental illness?
Yes.
Okay.
But we'll get into that later.
Okay.
But Meek was also a man of accomplishments. He produced the first single to go number one in both the UK and the US. He was the first British independent producer. He recorded the first rock concert at... He recorded the first rock concept album, and he founded Britain's first indie label.
What was the concept? Like, what if the Titanic didn't sink?
Oh, that would have been great.
It was about aliens.
Fuck yeah, man! I fucking like this guy!
Yeah, it was cool as shit. Now, of course, that number one hit ended up destroying him. The record companies didn't want to work with him because he was an unstable tyrant. He only released four tracks of his concept album on an EP that sold only 99 copies, and his music label folded in a year. But there lies the tragedy of Joe Meek.
So honestly, he was a real artist, and not one of these sellouts that does well.
Yeah, there is something really cool about selling only 99 albums. That's kind of an accomplishment in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing wasn't released until like they finally released it in, I think, 91 or 93 or something like that. But he did Joe Meek and the Blue Men. It's fucking great. I would recommend it.
Oh, you can see actually good music.
Well, I think it's good.
And he likes the pipe organ.
Oh, that's true. Are you still listening to pipe organ pipes?
Hot pipes?
Yeah.
Hot pipes, the pipe organ podcast. Yeah. I'm still listening to
how's
hot
it
pipes.
Doing?
I mean, it's still hot pipes.
Have they gotten
the
bump? Did they get the last podcast bump?
I don't know. I don't talk to the host of Hot Pipes.
I imagine he's accessible.
He talk to me.
I'm certain he would go, oh, Marcus, I knew I'd meet another man who understood the melodious sounds of the pipe organ.
Oh, my God, host of Hot Pipes. What are you doing with that empty pizza box?
Oh, it's my favorite pizza.
What's in there?
Oh, you want to see?
Yeah.
I got to hear fresh from France.
From France?
Yeah, look at it. It's Dookie.
It is. Oh, no.
Is that what he sounds like?
No, not at all.
Okay, not at all.
But the failures of Joe Meek is only the smallest part of the tragedy. The reason why we're talking about Joe Meek today is because his life ended in a brutal murder-suicide.
Oh. It's got to, man.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at a picture of this guy. He's got the pompadour. He's got an old-school look to him. Kind of handsome dude.
Yeah.
Okay.
But before we get into the murder-suicide, let's get into Joe Meek's weird-as-shit life.
Okay.
Now, some called Meek the low-budget Phil Spector.
I can tell you exactly who called him that. Phil Spector.
Absolutely.
Because Meek recorded all of his music in a custom studio built in his London apartment. And to give you an idea of what his music was like, here's a clip from his aforementioned number one hit, Telstar, by the Tornadoes.
Oh. Honestly,
surprisingly boring.
No, I thought that was, it's like a
I thought it would have more like pew, zip, pew.
No, that, it seems to me like if I was walking down the streets, I would feel like I was Mughead or Jugbutt or whatever the name of your video game players are.
I love Jugbutt. I love that game.
Yeah. But well, like, it's very video gamey.
Well, you only listened to a clip. You didn't listen to the beginning of the song that had all the space age noise in it. And you got to listen to it with headphones.
This is all you're giving me.
Because I can't play the entire song for you right now. You got to do the reading. I told you we were doing Joe Meek a week ago.
I know.
Do the reading, Henry.
You could have listened to Vampires, Cowboys, and Spacemen, which is the 2-CD set that was released a few years ago that brought together all of his wonderful recordings, or at least the stuff that had to do with Vampires, Cowboys, and Spacemen.
Well, I was reading about underwear stiffening.
I know what you were doing. But this is crazy. So that was in what, the 50s?
That was 1963.
So that was pretty...
Or, no, maybe either 1961 or 1963.
I
one of the two.
That was really good. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's great stuff. Yeah, you got to listen to the entire song. But that was one of Meek's more normal songs. Here's one that he produced with a guy named Screaming Lord Such called I'm in Love with Dracula's Daughter.
Cool.
Oh, okay. But I can't resist that passionate kiss. I'm in love with Dracula's daughter. I am downloading this for the plane. I seriously, I think that sounds kind of cool.
It's great. Yeah, it's really fun. Yeah, and Lord Such used to do live performances in London dressed as Jack the Ripper. And the reason why they called him Screaming Lord Such, not because he screamed on his recordings, but during live shows, he would just scream at people in the middle of the song and they all go, ah! He's screaming again.
And this is why we've never heard of him?
I don't know.
Technically, it sounds like Murderfest.
We're not going to talk about anybody you've ever heard of on this episode until I get to the part when I talk about all the people that Joe Meek said no to.
Okay. All right.
But besides just the weird stuff, Meek also produced somewhat more traditional songs, like his first number one hit, Johnny Remember Me by John Layton.
Ooh. It's about him remembering himself?
Johnny, no. Remember me.
It'll make sense.
Maybe that's his last name.
Johnny?
Hey, my name is Johnny, remember me? And he'd be like, no, I don't think we've met before. No, my last name is Remember Me. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
My name
about?
Is Johnny, remember me.
Is this
what
like
do you
old school Abbott and Costello is what you're talking about? But it's really, really stupid.
All right, let's check it out. Well, it's hard to believe, I know, but I hear her singing in the sign of the wind, blowing in the treetops, way above me.
Honestly, man,
I like this one.
Yeah, it's great. The 60s were cool. Yeah,
I actually went through.
Say.
We all went through. All of Murderfest went through a period of time where we were listening to a lot of psychedelic music, and it's fun to do. It just like it does ramble. It does sound like Johnny Remember Me. Does sound like one of those things that when you experience at a Los Angeles party when you meet somebody and you go like, "Oh, hey, what's your name?" It's like, "Alan, we've met."
I know.
Just live with it.
Fuck it up. Gah!
I love it.
I guess I couldn't remember you, huh? I guess you suck.
Wow.
You must suck then.
Are you freaking out?
Now, despite Joe's success in the music world, he was completely tone deaf, he couldn't play an instrument to save his life, and he couldn't read or write music because he got all of his ideas out by horribly singing a tune over and over again until his musicians could figure out what to play.
Johnny, remember me. Johnny remembers who? Remembers me.
It must have worked, though.
Yeah,
I mean, everyone got it.
Yeah, because Telstar would be like,
and the guys, just, you know, the tubas are trying to struggling to do it. And then he's like, "Now you've got it." Where they just start being like, "We just start playing a fucking random ass tune, and right. You just decided we got it."
Yeah, the bassist is in the corner taking a dump in a pizza box. Something weird's going on.
This is for a senator.
Oh, really? Special delivery.
But melody and musicality was not what made Joe Meek such a fantastic producer. Musically, it was said that Joe was an absolute moron, but when it came to sound, Joe Meek was a genius, and this obsession with sound came with a morbid bent.
Now, what do you mean that he good with sound?
He good with sound.
What does that mean?
he was able to produce the weird sounds that he had in his head on tape.
This is like if Joseph Kalinger was a producer.
If Joseph Count, like, if he was able to take the things that were happening in his head and put it out on tape, like, he had a very specific way that he wanted things to sound. Okay. And he was able to use tape manipulation. He would stomp on a bathroom floor to get, like, a certain bass drum sound that he had in his head. The sounds that he had in his head, he was able to actually make those happen.
So, good record producer, horrible, horrible apartment neighbor.
I can't imagine.
That would have, I would rather live next to Dahmer. I seriously, because at least he had to be quiet.
It, you know what? We're going to get into that. Okay. See, one of Meek's big obsessions was speaking with people beyond the grave. And besides the many seances that he took part in, Joe used to take tape machines to graveyards to see if he could pick up the voices of the dead.
Goth Daddy.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, the closest he ever came was when he ran across a cat once, and he thought the cat was speaking in a man-like way.
Hey! Hey, I'm a cat!
Are you a cat or are you just a ginger man?
Name's Ed. They call me Uncle Ed. I'm obsessed with
pooping. See? It gets into the back of your head. It really haunts you. Does. It fucks with you.
It does haunt me.
But the eventual translation of what the cat was trying to say was loose, to say the least. The best Joe could come up with was that the cat was saying, help me.
What?
But you can judge for yourself. I actually have the tape.
Okay.
Listen here.
You get, honestly, I hate that it's saying help me.
I can hear it. I hear it.
You hear it? Yeah.
Yeah. I can
help me. Yeah, it's help like me. Any EVP where they tell you what it is, and then you're like, okay.
Except well, for the one where the guy says, I have the body of a pig.
Yes, that was fucking sweet, dude. It's fucking sweet.
I have the body of a pig is incredible. But people do that with our intro as well. They say, rise from your grave.
It says the words on it. It's not EVP.
It says, rise from your grave. It's from Altered Beast.
I know, but some people have different meanings. Some people don't know what it says.
It's rise from your
They're
grave.
Hearing it wrong.
I know that, but I'm just saying.
That's different. That's what we're talking about here is a cat saying, help me. That's a very...
And it's
I'm
not even
so
saying help
sorry,
me, it's just meowing.
What we're talking about here is a cat saying, help me. God forbid.
Meek was into all kinds of occult shit, and he heavily studied the works of Aleister Crowley, although they didn't really make him special in the music world in the 60s, especially in Britain. All those fuckers were into Aleister Crowley. But the thing is, Meek actually may have contacted the other side. Meek said that during a seance / tarot card reading in January of 1958, a spirit told him that Buddy Holly would die on February 3rd.
Oh.
Now, it just so happened that Holly was touring the UK at the time, and Meek was able to meet him backstage at a show to deliver the message.
Oh,
can
no.
you imagine fucking being backstage before a show?
Oh,
you're Buddy Holly,
God.
And you're like... Hey, but boss, I should put my glasses on for tonight's performance. It's like, no, buddy, that makes you look like a nerd. It's like, no, I think it's going to make me different. And then all of a sudden you have Joe Meek come in and be like, you're going to die.
Jeez.
I spoke to a ghost cat.
Yes, just...
I spoke to a ghost cat. Yeah. And it told me you're going to die, Buddy Holly. And you have to then go and play Pigasoo. Pigasoo.
Just plumes of smoke coming through the door as he enters like a cryptic doomsayer.
Yeah, and Buddy Holly's just, I mean, he's just some fucking kid from Lubbock. You know, so actually he was probably like, I got to put my glasses on, goddammit. Oh, hi, Joe Meek. Nice to... Oh, I'm going to die, am I?
Yeah.
Very and
then,
good.
But then you wail on him. That's what I would have done.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
And this isn't just rumor or legend. Buddy Holly actually acknowledged in an interview that someone in the UK told him he was going to die in February. But it was already past February when Buddy Holly talked about the prediction, so he wasn't worried. But as it turned out, Spirit wasn't talking about February 3rd, 1958. It was talking about February 3rd, 1959,
whoa.
AKA the day the music died.
Oh, my God. That is creepy.
Yeah, it does
when
work.
Richie Valens, Big Bopper, and Buddy Holly all went.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, so, you know, he was right. It's just about everything but his career.
Yeah.
Well, air travel used to be much more dangerous. That is for sure. That's the thing with Lynyrd Skynyrd as well. When they died, the person on the television news said rock band Lynyrd Skynyrd died. I'm like, get it right. But they took that plane. They knew it was a horrible plane. And they were like, we'll just give it one last shot.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is these planes better be running pretty good when we're up there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared.
Yeah.
I know, but don't be scared. Just have booze. Booze will help you not be scared.
I know, but at some point, you know, I can't have booze anymore when the doctor tells me that I can't.
We talked about this, Marcus, last time, last Unside Stories, where he said the doctor will eventually, there's something that the doctor will tell all of us that mm-hmm. we will have to stop doing.
Yeah.
You're going to have to quit that vape.
Yeah.
You're going to have to quit vape and tobacco.
Yeah, it's also going to be sugary drinks as well. That's going to have to get cut out.
It's just because your teeth.
Yeah.
No, he's got
but your teeth look good now, honestly.
Thank you. I've been taking good care of them.
Can no, we I not see. Bring up Marcus's teeth?
I didn't that even mean to. Honestly, I was being
we
nice.
We used to do roast comedy, and then all of us realized we couldn't because all of us got our feelings hurt. And then we had to make massive changes in life.
Yes.
This whole Buddy Holly death prediction thing could have just been a coincidence, but either way, Joe Meek had been eerily right in predicting the death of one of his favorite musicians. Problem was, though, Joe Meek was also severely bipolar and showed heavy signs of schizophrenia. So such a confirmation was unhealthy because now he had it in his head that his paranoia, his predictions, they could come true.
Not
because
good.
One of them came true on a worldwide scale.
See, that would not freak me out. That would make me be like, you're going to die. You're going to die. You're going to I would be like Oprah passing out gifts, but death cards.
And in addition to the bipolar disorder and the schizophrenia, Joe Meek had a constant intake of amphetamines to stay awake and barbiturates to fall asleep.
The 60s, man.
Which only exacerbated his mental health problems.
Is it really any difference in the amount of coffee that I have to drink to keep going?
Absolutely.
And the amount of booze that I have to put into my body to go to sleep?
It's a gigantic difference if you're fucking, juggling Yellow Jackets and Bennies.
I wish I was.
Yeah.
The 60s were crazy with that stuff.
It was fun, man. Because the government used to give you the pills. And the government used
the
to
government
be... It was
still
the same,
does.
It was the same pills they were using to fight the Jerrys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this, of course, led to a fair amount of violent and unpredictable episodes, such as the times that he held a shotgun to the head of Mitch Mitchell, the eventual drummer of the Jimi Hendrix Experience, to, quote-unquote, inspire a better performance.
That's what Werner Herzog did with, what's his name? The actor. That he works with all time.
Johnny, remember me?
Yeah, Johnny, remember me. He did it with him.
And if this is starting to sound a lot like American record producer Phil Spector, you know, Phil Spector responsible for Be My Baby, You Lost That Love and Feeling, Do Do Ron Ron, and countless others.
And a lot of murder.
Murder as well.
It's hard to be a producer.
Yeah, it is.
Ask Travis, ask Marcus.
Yeah. Joe Meek and Phil Spector actually had one interaction. One day, Phil Spector decided to call Joe Meek's apartment studio to pay his respects, because Phil Spector was a big Joe Meek fan. But Meek, who was famously paranoid, told Spector to fuck off and stop stealing his ideas.
Okay.
And then he slammed the handset down on the receiver over and over again until it broke into 1,000 pieces.
It's a bit of a reaction.
I want to have that free. I want to have enough confidence one day in my life to do that, though.
Yeah.
But of course, now we have smartphones.
Yeah.
You can't break them.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No, they're really difficult to break. And if you snap them open, they're technically filled with poison.
Oh, okay. Just a lot of info on there.
And I will say, though, even though Meek wrote and produced amazing songs, like, I love Joe Meek. I've loved his songs for years and years and years. It's like his songs are like part of my like happy music repertoire. He was sometimes an absolute fucking idiot when it came to picking talent. A young manager named Brian Epstein went to Meek with a demo tape from a band he was thinking of representing called The Beatles.
The Beatles? Yeah. It's not even spelled correctly.
Yeah. Meek's advice? Pass.
Wow.
Hard pass.
Yep.
And then he threw the tape in the garbage. He's like, these Merseybeat boys have no idea what they're doing.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that should, if you've ever been denied for anything, if you were on Shark Tank, which I watch regularly, and you got denied, don't forget. You can still make it out there.
You got to try hard. And they are looking out for you. They want you to succeed. But you have to come in with the proper, the math breakdown. I forget what that is. You really got to come in with the numbers.
Yeah, you have to have the numbers. All right. Yeah. Beatles rejected.
Yeah. And instead of pursuing the Beatles, Meek went with bands with names like The Blue Men, The Driving Stupid, The Syndicats, and the worst, Alan Dean and His Problems.
Honestly, Alan Dean and His Problems is the greatest name I've ever heard in my
Alan
entire
Dean
life.
Alan Dean and His Problems, it is just, he's like, oh, the 405's packed today.
I love that song.
Oh.
Can you sing that song again?
405 is packed today. The 405 is packed today.
Take a wenger.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoy these bands, particularly the work Meek did with the Blue Men. He did his concept album with the Blue Men.
Oh.
The Beatles, that was an objectively horrible decision to make.
But a lot of people pass on the Beatles.
Well, yeah, were the Beatles, like, was their demo that good?
It was good enough. You know, okay. Like, it was definitely a good enough where they... Because the problem with the Beatles and a lot of those bands at the time is that all the record producers and companies were like, rock and roll is on its way out.
Oh. What did they think was going to come next?
They didn't know. They didn't care.
Just like more jazz?
I don't know. Yeah, that's weird.
At the time in England, like around this time, the people, especially in England, the people who were topping the charts were like middle-aged crooners. You know, like
so that's never going to die. They're like, that's forever.
Yeah, that's forever. And they also these.
You know how many crooners we have now?
Oh, of course, we got Susan Crooner, Tommy Crooner. They live out in Iowa. Great family. Great family.
Both died of AIDS.
Sad, though.
Very sad. Very sad. Well, these people also, like, the record companies had them under their thumb. They could pay them £20 for a song, and then they'd never have to pay them a single bit of money ever again. And they didn't want to have to deal with all these younger people.
Interesting.
But the Beatles weren't the only people that Joe Meek passed on. A few years after that, a different band came into audition for Meek, and Meek hated the lead singer so much, he ran into the room, put his fingers in his ears, and screamed until the lead singer left the room, and then... Joe Meek blew a raspberry at him as he left. That lead singer was Rod Stewart.
You can't say no to Rod Stewart because he remembers and he kicks fucking soccer balls into the audience.
Rod Stewart's the man. He still got it. Sex diva.
Mm-hmm. And eventually Meek convinced the band to fire Rod Stewart and change their name from the Raiders to the Moon Trekkers.
Trekkers?
He has a very, in today's world, he would have found a niche.
He would have. He absolutely would have. Without a doubt. Yeah, he really would have. And actually, the Moon Trekkers are fucking great. They wrote songs like this. Their classic Night of the Vampire.
So this is the second vampire theme song that Meeks has produced.
He produced a lot of songs about vampires. And a lot of songs about UFOs. And
I think it's cool.
And a lot of songs about cowboys.
All right. I mean, it's just anything but what I guess he knew and anything outside of Alan Dean and his problems.
Yes. Honestly, it sounds like us whenever we pitched a show to Holly Weird.
Yeah.
Hollywood would be like, it's aliens, serial killers, and cryptids. They'd be like, what? What? He's like, it's cowboys, aliens, and moon truckers. So, yes, I think this is going to work.
Yeah, vampires, cowboys, and spacemen is definitely...
That's cool.
That's the compilation to go for with Joe Meek because it's all instrumental surf stuff. But this is Night of the Vampire. You're going
to
love this song.
Isn't it weird surf music exists, but you can't listen to music when you're surfing? So you would think that they would create the music for the surfer.
You can't play me because he can't wear headphones.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so a man can play a ukulele next to the beach, which is technically just Hawaii. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's what they do. I'm like the big fat guy.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Who died of banana poisoning.
Oh, that's so weird. Potassium.
Right. Here's his song.
Does Carolina hide in the bathroom while you dance like an old-timey skeleton in a silent cartoon to this?
I'd fuck me. Yeah.
Carolina loves the way I dance to the Moon Trekkers.
That's great.
But yes, I do dance to like an old-timey skeleton to this music, and I've been doing it for a long time, and it's one of those things that if you want to be with me, you better be down with my skeleton dancing.
Whoa!
You have to be. If you're not down with my skeleton dancing... You're not down with me.
That's like me with my UFOs.
Part of who I am.
It's like if Nat could not stand UFOs, it would be very difficult to be in our own. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, if you love like the Cramps, go check out Joe Meek's surf stuff.
Sweet. Okay,
it's fantastic.
Cool.
And actually, that's not even his last fuck up. His third fuck up came after Telstar had become a hit. Meek's head had gotten pretty large, and when a young man named David Jones showed up at Meek's door, Meek said he was just too busy to see him. Eventually, Jones got an audition. But Meek, again, thought he was absolute shit. Pretty soon after that, David Jones changed his name to David Bowie.
Oh! I thought it was- was going to be that dude from the Monkees. Wasn't that Davy Jones?
Yeah, that was Davy. Yeah,
this is David Bowie.
That's why he had to say. That's why he had to change his name.
Yeah, yeah, that's why exactly why he had to change his name, because there was already a Davy Jones.
Thank God. Stewart, David Bowie, and the Beatles.
Yeah,
he
said no. But admittedly, David Bowie's, there's a reason why no one talks about Bowie's first album.
It's bad.
It's awful.
He started
Two is Sell Me a Coat.
It was strange. He started as a theater guy. And the way he started was a musical theater, and he used to do one-man shows. So it came from this world of the theater, and then it was more musically.
Yeah, it was very fanciful. I think the single off of it was The Laughing Gnome, which was, it had a really high-pitched gnome voice.
I like that.
It's about him.
In your mind, to the gnome in your mind.
Cool.
It's about him meeting a gnome on the street, and then they go watch TV together.
Write what you know.
Actually.
Write what you know. That's the only thing you can do.
And also, Meek was the first person. He did see some talent in Tom Jones. He was the very first, but you know, it's not unusual.
Of course.
The first person to record Tom Jones, but he couldn't get anyone interested in Tom Jones, so Tom Jones moved on.
Really?
Yeah. He also thought the Kinks and the Stones were absolutely awful, but he did at the very least recognize the talent of Ritchie Blackmore, who was the eventual guitarist for Deep Purple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he told the band that Ritchie Blackmore was playing in that they were all shit except for Ritchie.
Oh, Ritchie must have been happy.
Yeah.
No way, that's an awkward drive home.
No, just definitely, there's no way that that ruins a group dynamic when you find out that all of the rest of you are garbage.
But even with all these problems, Joe was still recording and releasing music. Problem was, he wasn't making a dime on anything, because his biggest hit, Telstar, even though it had sold 5 million copies, Meek had been sued for plagiarism because a French composer claimed that he stole the melody from a movie that the French composer had scored like 3 years earlier.
Do you think it's just crazy parallel thinking, or do you think it was...
It's pretty similar. It's pretty similar. But I think it was parallel thinking, or maybe he saw the movie and it just kind of slid in there. Because it's not the exact melody, but it's pretty similar.
Well, I mean, that's the same thing with comedians when they're like, I do the itchy butthole bit. And you're doing that now, I saw. And it's like,
yeah, and furthermore, the music industry completely moved on from Joe's style because the British Invasion sound was in full force. And Meek was able to hop on that sound for one hit by the Honeycombs, a song called Have I the Right? But after that song hit number one, Meek only had two more songs chart. 1966's Please Stay by the Crying Shames, and number 49 with a Bullet,
yep,
Digging My Potatoes by Hines and the Wild Boys.
I think it means a woman that loves his balls.
Oh, digging my potatoes.
She's really digging my potatoes.
That's great. So Have I the Right? It's a very interesting, like, question. It's more of a question than like, I got a right.
Yeah, it's a romance. It's about a guy who's like, have I the right to hug and kiss you? Have I the right to be the one?
Oh, it's about consent.
Okay. It is. Yeah, it's a fine 60s like Britpop tune, or not Britpop, but it's a fine 60s British Invasion song. There's nothing too special about it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fine, but Meek's got much better work. But by the time Digging My Potatoes came out, both Joe Meek's drug use and his mental health problems have produced a highly paranoid, erratic terror of a man, because Meek thought his recording studio was bugged by Decca Records, who were out to steal his ideas. Like, Joe Meek was not a good dude. Like, he could be very funny, he could be very charming, but he was also like an absolute tyrant. He would throw shit at people.
Okay.
He put a gun to Mitch Mitchell's head.
Right, shotgun.
Yeah. But a part of this is, at the time, they thought that this is how shit was done.
Everybody else was super professional. Mm. That's why he got fired from the record companies. Because at the time, record producers in England, they all wore white coats because they were engineers. And they had to separate themselves from all the riffraff coming in to record their rock and roll.
You rock and roll with your dervish spinning.
Hey, Rand, that's a really nice white coat, but you got a little poo-poo smudge. You got a poo-poo smudge.
Yes, I had a birthday party yesterday for my nephew.
You did.
We played a game called Make a Pizza.
Okay. You might want to wash that off before David Bowie comes in here.
He is skinny.
But there's no poo-poo in that man at all. You ruined me with that stupid freaking story.
Yeah, man. But what really pushed Meek over the edge was when he was outed as gay in the local newspaper after his arrest for, quote, importuning from immoral purposes, a.k.a. having gay sex in a London public toilet. Because at this time, being homosexual was illegal in England. Like, it was 100. You could be arrested just for being gay.
Wow.
And Joe Meek also came from a very rough and tumble country upbringing. He was the indoor boy while everyone else were the outdoor boys.
Right.
He was terrified of his mother finding out, of his father finding out.
Yeah.
Like, and some people say that that did exacerbate his mental health issues even more, because he was constantly afraid of being outed. And then he was outed in the newspaper.
I know what it's like to be an indoor boy.
Yeah, we all know what it's like to be an indoor boy.
But it just technically made me hornier for boobies. Yeah. But that's not my fault. I could have gotten gayer too.
Absolutely. I think it just makes you hornier for any. You're just sitting around thinking about whatever it is that sexually excites you. He got hornier for boys. You got hornier for girls.
Little thoughts, little seeds growing the plants.
It is weird though when you suppress certain things. The bathrooms seem bathrooms. Mm-hmm. Larry Craig, the old Republican senator, there. It's just strange that they think that that's. I guess that's a place where it's private.
Yeah,
the bathroom. So
yeah, yeah, it's private. It's private. It's anonymous.
Yeah, that's where you fuck.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess if you can't do it in public,
yeah, it's anonymous. You can't go out.
At least, you know, not in public, but
I mean, you have nowhere to meet people.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's like everyone has the same urges. You know, I guarantee you, if heterosexual sex became outlawed,
oh my god, that would be
heterosexual sex isn't even outlawed, and we still have glory holes. We still go fucking bathrooms.
Can I ask though, when was the first real glory hole done?
Mesopotamia.
Mesopotamia.
Wow. Is that old?
Archaeological surveys have said.
Oh, I know that hole. Yeah. How are you so familiar with what you call glory holes? You want to go out for pizza? I know what that means. I'm done. All right.
I'm staying in for pizza. This one's DiGiorno.
Now, the circumstances behind Joe Meek's violent death are not in question. The only thing that's a little fuzzy is how he got the gun.
Okay.
The former bassist for the Tornadoes and Meek's sometimes lover, Heinz Burt, said that he just left the gun in Joe's apartment to make room in his car.
God, it takes up so much room. That's why I don't have a gun in my car.
Yeah. Especially a huge shotgun. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and Heinz Burt is a fun side story in and of itself, at least in the music world. Joe Meek made him dye his hair blonde to stand out. And then Joe Meek was also known for, with singers at least, for pushing the pretty boys who had zero fucking talent.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Heinz Burt for years denied that they had a relationship, and then eventually said, like, all right, yeah, we were fucking.
You got me.
Uh-oh. Well, I'm just so happy record producers have changed.
Yeah.
You know, not pushing the pretty boys with no talent. No.
It's all ugly singers now.
No. Actually, Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
Not to say he's ugly, but he's
ugly. Disgusting.
Yeah. He's very good singing. Very good at singing.
Well, other sources say that Meek had taken the gun away from Heinz Burt after Burt admitted that he'd been shooting birds while he was out on tour with the Tornadoes.
Oh.
But either way, the fact remains that on February 3rd, 1967, Joe Meek had a shotgun in his apartment. Now, it probably goes without saying, because Ben, you already pretty much predicted this, that a man who had a recording studio in his apartment is going to have a contentious relationship with his neighbors.
Right.
And that went double for Joe, whose landlady, Violet Shenton, lived on the first floor.
Yeah, you shut up there with your skeleton bones. What are you doing up there, some corner cemetery party?
And furthermore, since the hits had run out and the Telstar royalties were still tied up in the courts, Meek was way behind on rent.
Oh.
And on the day of February 3rd, Joe had woken up manic and paranoid, convinced the police were watching him. Or at least that's what he told studio assistant Robbie Duke, who back then was going by the name of Patrick Pink. Duke was the last person to see either Joe Meek or Violet Shenton alive. That morning, Violet walked up the stairs to have a conversation with Joe about the rent. She stopped in to talk to Robbie, who warned him that Joe was in an awful mood. But Violet, who was apparently a sweet woman, said she'd sort him out.
I'll show him my boobies.
Oh, my.
So she went up to the third floor where Joe was listening to music. The music turned off, then Duke heard shouting, specifically Meek saying, "Where's the book? Where's the book?" over and over again.
Huh.
Now, he could have been talking about the rent book, because apparently that's a thing they do or did in the UK. They'd write down every time they paid their rent in a book, but we're not exactly sure that's the book he was talking about, but
okay.
It probably was. Either way, pretty soon, Duke heard Shenton telling Joe to put down the gun. Then came a sudden blast, and Violet Shenton walked out of the door of the third floor apartment with a smoking shotgun wound to the back and fell into Robbie Duke's arms, where she died a couple of minutes later.
Whoa!
Then, after killing her, Meek reloaded the shotgun and turned it on himself, ending his own life at the age of 37. It was exactly 8 years to the day since Buddy Holly had himself died after Joe's prediction.
Oh my God.
Cool.
Crazy.
And to add one more piece of tragic irony to the whole story, the Telstar plagiarism case was finally settled a couple of weeks after Joe's death in Joe's favor.
So he could have gotten all the money.
The royalties came pouring in about a year later.
Oh man.
That's what happens. And he could at least have gotten, he could have gone to a loony bin, he could have gone to a booby house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever. Whatever restaurants he wanted to go to.
Something to tighten up the bolts.
Yeah. But Joe Meek wasn't allowed to see him. And for one other weird tiny little thing, little cherry on top, date of Phil Spector's murder, when he murdered that woman in his house, February 3rd.
Whoa. Oh, my God. That is actually totally crazy.
That is really, really weird.
Yeah. What are the odds? Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's like one out of 365, I guess. But
for it all to be on the same day?
But that is crazy.
Yeah, for them all to be on the same day, yeah.
Wow. All right.
History is interesting.
Now, Marcus, how is you have a music podcast coming out here, right?
Yeah. Me and Caroline are working on a music podcast right now that should be coming out, I think, in like 2 months or so. We're going to be doing it in seasons where we cover like certain genres.
Cool. Is it going to be anything? Are you going to cover stories like this, or is this more going to be like for the last podcast type thing?
I mean, we're definitely going to be, we're just going to be covering the history of like 10 different punk bands for the first season.
Awesome.
Second season, it's going to be 10 different like 90s alternative bands and so on and so forth. Yeah, we're going to be starting with the Stooges.
But yeah, but you can't touch anything with the pipe organ circuit because the hot pipes is going to come.
Of course.
Gonna fucking sue us.
That man's going to murder you.
No. Yeah, no. Because he's going to show up with a fucking Phantom mask on and he's going to set fire to your apartment building.
No. Yeah, I'll leave the story of Georges Montalba to him.
All right.
Well, wow, that's a great story, Marcus.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marcus. That was great.
You know,
but it will be a lot of stories like that because the music world is full of shit like that.
I really think it's interesting because, you know, people, they're trying to fix Holly weird. They're trying to fix these things. But I don't think they understand is that when you open that fucking lid of really talking about, like, we need to clean up this industry, and you're like, it has been based upon violence and horrible, insane people since the first glory hole.
Since Mesopotamia,
yes,
from
like
my
literally
understanding.
Show business and this type of insanity go hand in hand.
Artistic, you know, the mind of an artist can go astray sometimes.
And that's the thing about Joe Meek is that he only worked with people that he truly enjoyed.
So
like, he only worked with music that he like truly enjoyed.
Stay
and
true
in.
To yourself. That's the lesson,
right?
Yeah. And also get help for your mental health.
I think that's a bigger lesson,
much important lesson. And also, don't kill your landlady when she asks for rent.
Don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't. You can just leave your apartment. I would say before you kill anybody, remember, you could always just disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't kill anyone.
Never kill anybody. You could just
right.
You could take it to the road. It's really hard for people to find you.
And I can't even imagine. I'm sure it's difficult for a dude at that age to get help. I don't know what the 60s culture was for mental health. They
1968,
probably
yeah. I mean, it was for him, it was a combination of his mental health problems, his drug addiction, and his inability to come out as gay.
Well, as we talk about with Joe Callinger, sometimes you don't really truly understand that when you are in the throes of the sickness and you don't have a history of any sort of therapy, you sometimes don't know that you're fucked up.
Oh, I don't think so. Yeah.
No,
would you?
No, absolutely not. And he also always had that Buddy Holly prediction to cling to. That one time it was right because it was right on a worldwide scale. It was
crazy.
One of the biggest events of the decade. You know, if not the fucking century. Like, it's one of the defining events of the 50s, without a doubt.
Oh, absolutely.
Music history,
it's top three defining events.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and he was right in predicting it. So that he always had that to fall back on.
Oh, my God. Well, maybe he just knew that we had to fix our planes. Aeronautics hadn't been perfected yet.
I think that's what this is all about.
Yeah. Either that or don't fly into a snowstorm.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, when everybody's saying don't fly, don't fly, don't fly, maybe you don't take off.
Yeah. And don't take an airplane just because the bus is cold.
Oh, is that what happened with Buddy Holly?
I mean, yeah, I would. No, that's
exactly what happened. Is the
bus was cold.
The bus, there was February. It was what was the tour called? I think like Winter Wonderland or Winter Dance Party or something like that. And they had the choice to either take the bus, and they were doing it in the Midwest. And they had the choice to either take the bus, which had no heater, to the next destination, or they could charter a flight and get there in like an hour or so.
Well, they didn't know.
So they went with the smaller flight. And Richie Valens was really, I mean, you know from watching La Bamba, you know Richie Valens was sick. You know?
La Bamba?
Yeah. La Bamba.
Yeah.
Who's the guy who plays?
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, the Diamond's really good in that movie.
Yes, he is.
Los Lobos came under the national attention because of that film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a band called Los Lobos coming back into the American scene with that soundtrack to La Bamba.
Oh, right.
Man, I love show business stories like stuff like this. This is fucking great.
Yeah, we're gonna be this is gonna be the show. Yeah, we're gonna be covering the Stooges. We're gonna do the Sex Pistols. We're gonna do Joy Division. We're gonna do Dead Kennedys. We've got.
Let's
not
tell all our
list.
Secrets. We don't hide. We're gonna somewhere play our cards close to our tits.
I mean, there's gonna be a whole lot more than that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's gonna be a whole. There's gonna be a whole lot more than that.
There's gonna be a whole lot more than that.
All right. All right. I'll see you when I believe it.
Yeah. All right, guys. We gotta wrap this up. I gotta go eat some cheese. I got a business meeting at 5 p.m. here.
Oh, is that fundraiser? I'll see you there.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening to our relaxed Fit Last podcast on the left. It's not an orgasm sound.
I'm relaxed.
I don't think that is you relaxed. That would be you publicly masturbating, which is not relaxing.
No, I've been, not until the very end.
So we're excited to see everyone. Obviously, Vancouver, wonderful time here. Absolutely love it. We'll see you in Seattle, and we'll see you for two shows in Portland, which we cannot wait to get over there and see you all.
Love me some Portland, man. So excited.
Oh, so excited for Seattle and Portland. And,
I'm going to get so many IPAs, I'm going to shit so fucking brown.
Oh.
Yeah, dude.
Be careful, buddy.
It's fart juice. That's all IPAs are, man.
The IPAs are too much for me.
I actually would rather, I like a Pilsner.
I just want my BLs. Last night I had Miller Lights. I was also fine with that. All right, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail yourselves.
Hail Gene.
Hail me.
And a Magustalations.
Oh, also, June 9th, Bell House, Wizard and Bruiser, page 7.
Oh, yes.
You got to check out the show. We're going to be there. I'm going to be there to see this fucking shit. I'm really excited to see what they do with the show, and I don't know what it's going to be yet.
Actually, yeah, we should have said that up top. Maybe we can do something.
We can do a little ad or something.
We'll do a little ad. Mm-hmm. All right, everyone. Talk to you soon.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.